Hey there, welcome to Embrace Your Strengths podcast. You're going to hear inspiring stories of men and women who are embracing their top five Clifton strengths in all kinds of ways. You'll be encouraged to understand more about what's so great about you, learn how knowing, developing, living more moments using your strengths can bring you joy and purpose in your life. I'm your host, Barbara Colo. Hi there. Welcome to Embrace Your Strengths. I am excited for you to hear from my guest today, Karen Yang in Austin, Texas. Welcome, Karen.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here to be part of this conversation.
Yeah, Karen and I have known each other a lot over the years, and just recently our paths have crossed even more at church, and we're in the same small group. And I am so excited for you to hear from her. She has so much wisdom and joy, and I'm especially excited as we talk about her strengths and what that looks like in her life, in her work, and all the things. So I would love you to introduce yourself, Karen, who you are, where you live, and what you do.
All right. Well, my name is Karen Yang, and I live here in Austin, Texas. I have the unique privilege to work for an amazing organization called Mobile Loaves and Fishes. We are a Christian nonprofit, and our passion is to serve the chronically homeless individual in our county. And we do that through going out through our food truck ministry, which brings food and friendship to men and women who are still on the streets. And then the most cool thing that I love to talk about in terms of what we do at Mobile Loaves and Fishes is we have the largest master plan development that serves the chronically homeless. It is currently a 51-acre master plan development of tiny homes. And it is such the coolest place. I always thank God that I have the opportunity to work in a place where I see miracles happen all the time. And so that's what I get to do. I get to work with Mobile Loaves and Fishes. And then I have the particular unique opportunity to work with churches and nonprofits across the country, also including local government, to replicate the model that we have in Austin, Texas, across the country, so that we can provide not only housing, but also an opportunity to lift men and women off the streets into a community where they're valued, there's dignity, and there's opportunity for them. So that's what I do. I've been in Austin well over maybe close to 25 some years. And I am just grateful that after many moves in terms of my professional career, I found myself in this place. Definitely a privilege and an honor to be able to do something very purposeful and meaningful with my life.
Wow, that's so awesome. I love that. Well, and recently I got to experience, I think I'd been out there before, but just a little bit at Christmas time, just with the caroling and s'mores, with getting to serve the folks that are there. And it was just such a highlight to really see what's going on and meet some of the people. And I just love hearing about what you're doing, but especially as we chatted for a while recently about like who you are and why you're just so perfectly suited for what you're doing. It's just so cool. So I would love for you to tell what your top five Clifton strengths are and kind of just what that looks like and I think you took it a long time ago, but kind of how those show up in your life and what you think about them.
Well, I took the Strength Finder assessment, I want to say very, very early on when it was first coming out, good 20 some years ago. And I think what really captivated me with taking that assessment is I'm just curious about learning as much as I can about who I am and how other people function. And so when I took the test, my top five strengths is number one, strategic, number two, learner, which kind of led me to take the assessment. Mm-hmm. The third one is intellection, fourth is input, and the last one is achiever. And it's funny to me because early in my 20s, I kind of hit a point in my life where I was really just asking some questions around what am I doing with my life? What should I be doing with my career? Am I headed in the right direction? And I don't want to waste my life. And I think nowadays they call that a quarter life crisis, you know, midlife crisis, quarter life yeah. crisis. And so I have a lot of sympathy for young folks who are going through that process, because those are some of the most deep questions a person can ask. You get one life, how are you going to live it? And so when I was going through my quarter life crisis, I started, you know, really diving deeply, looking for what I can to figure out, how am I going to use this one life that God has given me? And after I took the assessment, I realized, oh, that falls very much under strategic. Uh-huh. As a strategic thinker and as one of my strengths, my goal, whether I'm conscious of it or not, is always trying to find what is the most effective, efficient path forward to accomplish whatever the goal is. And so basically, I was asking the strategic question around my life. So I get one life. I don't know when the end date is, but if I were to maximize and get as much out of my life, what are the decisions and what are the choices that I can make at that point to help me steward this one life that I had? And so that is one expression of how that showed up. And then, of course, the second expression was I started learning all the things, like, you know, I looked into Myers-Briggs. And then at some point I looked at, of course, there was DISC assessments. There's the Clifton Strength Finders. I also did a dive into looking at Enneagrams. And it just really, for me, it was a sense of, I can't necessarily control other people in my life, but I can make choices for myself. And so the better I can in understanding what I've been given, and a lot of it, I didn't know till I uh-huh. read about it or interacted with other people who gave me feedback or affirmation or try things out when I'm like, no, I am not good at this. I thought I was good at this theoretically, but mm-hmm. once I tried it, I was like, oh my gosh, thank God I did not choose to become a doctor. I would have been terrible.
You had thought about?
Well, it's funny because growing up as an Asian American, there's kind of like these standard quote unquote roles, you know, the Asian community elevates in terms of jobs. Mm-hmm. One of which is, you know, you should consider being a doctor. Doctors are very revered. They make good money. You know, you should be an engineer, you know, all these different options. And I started with the doctor route, and I discovered, and I interviewed a doctor at my church growing up, and I found out, oh my gosh, that's so much school. And so after I realized how much it costs and how much school I needed to take, I'm like, I don't want to do that. Maybe that's the strategic gift in place, but yeah. I chose not to do that. And nowadays, I'm so thankful. I would be a terrible doctor. I go and get my blood drawn. I can't look. So,
yeah,
I'm so glad I didn't pursue that. I did become an engineer, but that fits more with, I believe, the life theme that God has given me. So grateful that discover some things along the way, and I'm really grateful that God kind of steered me through different life circumstances to where I am now.
That's great. Well, I know when we were chatting, you mentioned, I think several years ago, maybe 10, I don't know, that you came up with your mission statement for your life. And I think as you were sharing that, it just seemed so spot on, as obviously your strengths are integrated in what that is. But can you tell me more about that?
Yeah. So this was part of my quarter life crisis. I, at that time, was trying to figure out, well, you know, how do I steward my life? And so I started reading all the books. Again, that's the learner and the input and the intellection part, because I was mm-hmm. spending a lot of brain power and time just thinking and noodling, probably overthinking some things, to be honest. That's kind of one way that one of my strengths can go kind of maybe sideways or more fuel than it really needs. And so I was reading a book. It was a bit of a kind of a business book, but also kind of personal growth book. And in it, the exercise was to come up with your life's mission statement. And so I did follow the exercise, did everything that was in that book, and I crafted a mission statement, which I pretty much have not tweaked in the past, you know, 20 some years. It's really served me well. And so my mission in life is to motivate, cultivate, and advance leaders of organizations to live out their divine design. Ideally, that is for the kingdom of God, the advancement of the kingdom of God into his glory. And so that first part, motivating, cultivating, and advancing leaders of organizations to live out their divine design has been such a North Star for me, because it's allowed me to identify who I believe God has called me to serve, which are leaders of organizations. It doesn't need to be a huge organization. It doesn't even, you know, it's any type of organization where a leader is stepping forward and saying, I'm willing to step out, influence other, and take responsibility for that. And I think leaders, when you know you're a leader, you realize that there's the piece that's you, and then there's something that's beyond you that you're caring, that you're responsible for. And I find that being a leader comes with its own sets of, you know, opportunities and privileges, but really it comes with a lot of extra burdens and tension to navigate, because you're, in a sense, not only responsible simply for yourself, you're responsible for others. And so I think part of that comes out of my experience being put in leadership positions since I was young, and realizing, oh, to do this well, it's not about using, quote unquote, any authority or power or influence I have just to get things done. There's a piece of how do we lead well, care for people. Of course, there's the term servant leadership. And so I just have a great sense of empathy for people who choose to step out in being a leader. So that mission statement has really guided me in my choices of work, in my choices of what I choose to invest my, you know, outside of work time in. And it just gives me a lot of life, because as I've lived on purpose, I've seen the fruits of that and the impact that I've had. Obviously, I'm just there to help motivate and cultivate, and I'm not doing the direct work. But it is such a privilege and honor. And sometimes I'm like, wow, I get to do this. This is great. Love it.
That's awesome. I love, yeah, just hearing all of that, of just how, like you say, just strategic it is, even as you did your mission statement that kind of, as you said, has been guiding you for so long. I know as we were chatting also, you were telling me about, well, what the question I was asking is like, what are some of your proud moments, like when you've really seen your strengths all in action? And I think one of your things you mentioned was when you were a foster parent. Can you tell me about that and what all you learned from that, and just kind of how that journey kind of came about and what that was like?
Well, I would say that my kind of foray into the foster care system and then eventually being called to be a foster parent was not something if you asked me a good 5 years before then that and told me, I know what's going to happen in your life in 5 years, you're going to be a foster parent, I would have laughed in your face. It just was not on my radar of what I thought I would be involved in. But sometimes circumstances come your way. And I would say in this case, it was really a calling from God, because I think not only was I called to serve a child who came from a hard place and a broken home for a season, I also believe that God used that opportunity to actually broaden who I am as a person, both using my strength, but also broaden me as a person in areas that were not my strength. And so that's one of the things I think a lot is that I love all these assessments. They give you a framework and kind of a direction to look, to focus your energy and your learning and your self-awareness. I think that's so beautiful that I love them, obviously, because I've taken all the tests. Uh-huh. And at the same time, I think there's something to be said about the test does not reflect your life. And so when I became a foster parent, God really called me and opened my heart more than anything. And so 4 of my 5 strengths is in the reflection category, quadrant of the many, many strengths that's on the StrengthFinder assessment. And those 4 strengths tends to my natural comfort zone, I guess for a lack of a way to say it, is to stay in my head. It's simply to think about things, designed plans, and come up with ways to say things. But really, because those fourth quadrants is primarily in my thinking and in my head and internal, part of my growth has been to, well, how do I move into other quadrants? How do I engage people who have different strengths than me, and they don't have to be like me? And so my stint in being a foster parent was a perfect blend of using my strength, but also growing me in ways that I didn't know I needed to grow so that I would be even more effective today as a leader in what I do now. And so I, again, kind of went through the process of becoming a foster parent because I just really saw God's heart for the marginalized, for the most vulnerable in our society. And of course, kids who come out into foster care come from really the, you know, kind of a catastrophic breakdown of family. Something terrible has happened such that they had to be removed from their home. And so when I had done some respite care, babysitting for kids who were in foster care, but my first placement was this with this, you know, just incredibly vibrant, highly extroverted, joyful four-year-old. And so as I engaged in that process, I realized here was a four-year-old child who needed an advocate. And in order to advocate for her, I, in a sense, had to learn a lot of things to get there. I was talking with you earlier, Barbara, about how, like, I am not someone who really dreamt about being married or having kids or like coming up with names of my kids or anything like that. That wasn't really something I dreamt about growing up or even as a teenager. I just figured at some point I might get married and I might have kids, but it wasn't something like I longed for it. And so when this popped up, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be a mom and there's no gestation period.
Yeah.
She's just going to show up when it happens. And I don't know when. I just like kicked into overdrive with my learning strength. And I'm like, I got to learn everything. I got to learn all the things so that I will be prepared. And ultimately, no one's ever prepared for this.
Right.
But it definitely helped me once the child was placed in my home. I knew some of the languages, who the players were in the entire system that this child will interact with. And I had to keep learning. But I will say, I like took parenting classes before she was placed with me, and I was sharing with a friend and what I was learning in parenting classes. And my friend was like, can I sign up for that class? You know, they just give you the baby at the hospital and they're like, good luck with that. And you've taken classes. And so it was fun to hear that from my friend who I was processing with about all I was learning about parenting, and particularly parenting of kids who have trauma. And it was just fun. So I used that, my learning strength. The other strength that I really used as a foster parent was realizing that the foster care, and I'll use the word system, is quite complex. There's so many parties that are involved. I, you know, counted on my hand at least six parties, adults or agencies or organization that was attached to the child. And in a sense, I felt like, yes, there was already the difficulty of caring for a kid who had trauma in their life. So there's those kind of behavioral, you know, helping a child adapt to your rhythm, you're adapting to them. So there's just the whole like parenting piece of it. But because this child came attached to half a dozen other entities that want an accounting for what's happening, I, in a sense, became her business manager and had to understand how did all the parties interact with each other. And what I discovered was that all the individual parties wanted to do their best, but they may not be resourced or positioned or even communicating with one another to provide a holistic support in advocating for the child's need. And so I used my strategic skill set there to begin realizing, okay, I need to coordinate some of these meetings. I can't just wait on these meetings being called on me. Sometimes I had to, you know, connect different parties to get everyone on the same page in terms of what was happening with the child. And so it was a lot of work, but I was grateful that I had the opportunity to really just give all I can to help this child navigate through the season where, you know, she effectively, even though as a 4-year-old, got the message that she didn't belong. And so to support her in that transition and then help her such that she eventually got placed in a home, I look back on that as probably one of the most rewarding things that I've done. I don't know if I would call it an accomplishment, but I did feel like I was able to use my strength in caring for someone who didn't have the resource or the ability to care for themselves. I mean, as a child, obviously.
That's so encouraging to hear. And I know even like you'd mentioned yesterday, just that the CASA worker just said that they'd never met anybody that did all that as well as you. I mean, I think that was just such an example of your strategic and all those things you mentioned of coordinating so much and advocating for this sweet foster child that you had of like, you were in your jet stream doing that, even though maybe you went into it just that you might have thought that might've been more challenging, but I don't know. Can you say that in a better way than I just said it?
Well, I definitely knew I was in over my head because as I felt called to take on this, you know, responsibility, take on this task, like I said, I, you know, didn't have experience raising my own children at that time. And so I felt very underprepared. But I think the thing that I was able to utilize was my strength, my strategic learner, intellection, input. And my achiever wanted to make sure in whatever way success could be defined for a kid who came out of a broken home, I was, in a sense, somewhat goal-oriented. I wanted her to, have some stability while she was with me. And so I definitely applied all those skill set. And what's funny to me is I came into thinking, oh, I'm so like under-equipped. This is so not my space. You want to put me in front of a business meeting talking to, you know, CEOs, presidents and whatnot. I don't get fazed with that. But you put me in front of kids and they're like trying to understand and read them. And I'm like slightly terrified. Now I'm at a better place because I will say that this is what I was mentioning about how oftentimes the opportunity exists for us to enter into a space where we feel maybe incompetent or under-resourced, and that's where the opportunity to grow happens. And so on one hand, my foster child's CASA worker really affirmed the strength that I brought that typically is not what, and I don't know for sure, but because I'm only one foster parent, but from what I can gather, the skill set that I brought was unique for this child in that it's very systems focused. I didn't only care for the child. I looked at how she fit into the system.
The bigger picture. Yeah.
The bigger picture. And so it was very affirming that she, you know, said, hey, I used to be a CPS worker. Now I'm CASA a worker and you've done a phenomenal job. You're one of the better foster parents that I've seen. So that was definitely affirming. But then going back to where I felt incompetent or inadequate, all that, it was really in the space that's not in any of my quadrant, which is being a relator. Right. I'm like, how do I relate to this child? How do I build relationships with her therapist, her, you know, preschool teacher, her caseworker with CPS, my foster agency rep, all these different individuals, the CASA worker? I had to grow in that to be effective. And so I'm grateful, so grateful for that experience because it caused me to have to stretch. And some things, you can read all the books that you want, and I'll speak to all of your listeners who are thinkers. It's easy to just say, okay, I've read the book, check, you know,
yeah.
Some things do not translate until you go through the experience of it. And I think the experience for me in being a foster parent for that season completely radically changed the direct trajectory of my life. And I think being a foster parent made me a better person and a better leader as a result of it.
That's awesome. Well, I know that you are conscientious and intentional of, like you say, about learning about areas that maybe aren't your strengths. And I know you've done a lot of work just with a lot of the trainings that we both have been part of, just that help people grow relationally and all kind of different avenues. Can you talk about that a little bit, about what you've enjoyed? And even, I know as you're leading a team, a training that's coming up soon, but like, what are some of those things? Cause I can see that you're very conscientious about learning what does it mean to grow in the areas that I'm maybe not as strong in?
Yeah. So again, this was in my late 20s. I was going through a season in my life where here I am, smart kid, you might say, if you were looking at me at that time, you know, I graduated from the University of Texas, have my engineering degree, was climbing the ladder in terms of working in the tech sector and doing very well. And yet my life experience at that time was not what Jesus promised. Jesus promised in the gospel that he came to give life and to give it abundantly. And if I were to, you know, look at that season of my life, I wouldn't say that there was an abundance of joy or an abundance of freedom. Instead, I felt overwhelmed, anxious, and in a sense, depressed at that season of my life. And what I couldn't figure out, even just my word choice right now, is what I couldn't figure out. I was like, I read all the things. I've gone to all the classes. I probably know more than the average person about, you know, trying to live a purposeful life. And as a person who has grown up in the church, I'm like, well, I've read God's word. I've had good people pour into me. Why does my life not reflect what Jesus promised, which is the abundant life? And so I couldn't get my brain around why life wasn't showing up the way that I hoped that it would or had been told that it could be. Now, I'm not saying like life is, Jesus promised a perfect life without suffering and difficulties. Obviously, that's not the case. But I would say that there is an experience even in the hard that can be rewarding and joyful. And so that wasn't my experience. And I was very fortunate. This was probably 18 or so years ago, where I had a friend who introduced me to a really unique form of, we'll just say, training that is based on kind of Socratic methods and then also based on experiences. So it's experiential training. And instead of going to this training where people are telling you, here are the one, two, three steps of how to do X, Y, Z, it was lots of questions about how I view the world. What were the conversations that I had in my life that I was saying to myself and maybe not to others? It was really challenging me to look at not what I make up about how the world was, but really hearing from other people telling me, actually, I experienced you this way. And I thought I had a facade that I got it together. But then to hear from a stranger, someone I've never met that happens to be in this training, tell me that I experienced you as bitter. I'm like, where did that come from? How did you know that?
Oh,
and then I'm like,
see that?
How did you see that? What is it that I'm like exuding that you would say that that's your experience of me? And am I bitter? You know, I didn't even think I was bitter, right? Mm-hmm. And so those were the things that I realized, that to grow in life, I need community. I need people around me that is going to love me enough to tell me the truth, or is bound to me in such a way that the truth can be spoken, and that they respected me enough, A, not to lie, not to, you know, hold their punches, and to really, for the sake of me becoming a better person, to be willing to love me, to tell me the truth. And so that has been a really resourceful tool and opportunity. And I've partnered with an organization called Gap Community to participate in attending in several of their trainings that's around the Socratic and experiential based, you know, kind of method that has really challenged me at different stages of my life. And I'm just so grateful, because we need each other. We need each other to grow. And they create a unique context in their trainings on their team to do that. But it's more than that. It's I get to learn from that and take that back home. I take that into my work. I apply the lessons that I discover there, and I try to translate that into all my relationships and to invite people to speak into my life and to also speak into other people's life for the sake of all that they can be, right? For the sake of the possibility of the wholeness that God intends for all of us to become. And so, yeah, it's just been a real powerful thing. And I highly recommend it to anybody who may be able to have an opportunity to engage in this particular type of training, because it forced me to get out of my head. And I will say that, you know, for others who maybe lean in another quadrant, like I have a lot of friends who are in the more relator feeling quadrant, and I'm mm-hmm. so grateful for them because I need them in my life. Sometimes it's helpful to also say, okay, let me ask myself the question, or have people ask me the question of like, well, why am I always trying to please people? Right? And how is that actually not serving the person that I love or serving our relationship? So that's just another example kind of out of the, you know, the relator quadrant of, if that's, you know, you lean that way, the beauty of learning with other through experience is really powerful. It's getting outside of our own feelings, our own thinking to access reality with one another.
Yeah. That's really powerful. And I know, like, even as we chatted, just that our quadrants are kind of different, and it's neat to see just the value that I know. I mean, we know that, but I think even seeing you kind of on a regular basis with our small group and stuff, it's just such a gift to see other people in action, to see how you think, see how you lead, see how you connect with people. But I know we all can tend to think, oh, I have gaps in this area, or this not having this is a liability. But I think, I don't know, I think just my heart, even as I chat with people every week about who they are and what their strengths are, and just the value that each person brings, you know, that we kind of tend to gravitate to people that maybe are a little more similar to us, but we know that, you know, just the body of Christ, that we need each part, each person, each different gift and strength, whatever it might be, whatever lane we're talking about. But I don't know, I just appreciate so much your clear and deep strategic thinking. It really challenges me, encourages me.
Well, I think it's so important that we all have diversity in our life, because none of us are meant to do all of life on our own. That wasn't what God designed. And really, if anybody wants to experience any love at all, it means there's at least one other person involved, right? And so to really experience love and experience all that life can bring us, it just means that we get to come together with people who are different from us, learn from them, have them help share the load or bring the perspectives that we can't see, because none of us is God. We're not able to see everything and bring, you know, different perspective. I just find that incredibly valuable. It makes life so much more interesting. It makes life richer. It brings more joy and laughter. Now, of course, there's always some tension with, you know, differences, right? Like, that's just a human dynamic. But I have found that as I've grown and moved out of my quadrant and move into other quadrants and built relationship with people in different quadrants with different strength, different passions, different experience, I find my life is so much richer and also really much more productive. When I was a foster parent, as a single working professional, you know, nobody signs up, oh, I want to be a single mom, you know, but because of my community at church and friends outside of church who saw me trying to do this crazy thing. And really, it's an impossible thing to parent. I think parents are courageous, those who are trying to do it the best that they can. They're raising a life. And so that's never meant, in my opinion, to be done on your own. And so when I stepped into what God was calling me to do, I was terrified. But to see then my community come around me and to use their gifts and to use their strength and their experience. One of the families in our small group at church already had kids. And so for my foster child to be able to integrate into another family with kids around the same age was such a gift to me. And it was beautiful. And now, you know, I'm good friends with that entire family. I love their kids. Love being in relationship with them. It's just, life is so much richer. It's probably the best way I would say that. And I would say now in my life, I can say with truth and authenticity that I have over the last, you know, 20 some years experienced an abundant life. Because if I were to, you know, in my 20s, imagine where I would be today, it would not be where I would be today. I would have never forecasted the many relationships, the experiences, the opportunities that I've been given, all, I believe, perfectly designed by God. But I had to do my part in really figuring out, how do I steward my life? How do I understand my gifts? How do I discover them, really start to utilize them, and how do I share them with others as part of my journey to today? And so I give a lot of thanks to God for really fulfilling his promise. And I'm excited more than ever, you know, looking into the next 20 years of my life of like, what exciting things will God bring? And how can I continue to bring my gifts and share my gifts with others? Because as I give my strength, I know there's huge opportunities for me to also receive from others, which really is just beautiful.
That's awesome. I love that. Well, I love all the insights and just windows you've given about who you are, how these strengths show up, and just kind of the journey that you've been on in learning and growing in so many different ways. But one last question I have that I love to ask everyone is, what has brought you joy lately or put a smile on your face?
I think the thing that has brought me, not like, and I think of joy as this kind of enduring experience regardless of circumstances, right? And so what's brought me joy actually has been really practicing something that does not come naturally to me, which is implementing a Sabbath resting process into my life. And so that includes different aspects of what that looks like in my life. And one part of that includes this Christian practice called centering prayer. And centering prayer is really choosing to be with God without letting my thoughts take over. It's being with God in silence, in stillness, and as my thoughts come, just release them, which is so the opposite of how I'm wired. But I found,
because
my brain is constantly running at like 100 miles per hour. I'm thinking about things that are happening, what I need to do, things I want to learn. I mean, when Google came out, it was so not good for me because it's like, you know, now you can rabbit trail throughout the entire internet. But as someone who primarily is constantly living in my thoughts, one of the ways that centering prayer has helped me is to just let that go. It's a daily practice I implement, but I definitely implement it along with my Sabbath routine, which is to rest. And to rest and take the time to do and enjoy things that are life-giving to me. And so that practice, along with getting out into nature by myself, taking time, some of it does still come back into my strength of, you know, journaling and so forth. But getting to, for instance, this week I went to paddle boarding after work to begin my Sabbath process on Lady Bird Lake, and just to like be in nature, take in the breeze, be on the water, kind of in that peaceful zone has brought me a lot of joy lately. And so I hope that I will continue to practice those, you can call them habits or disciplines, but really it's really brought joy whenever I engage. And I do, I find myself smiling when I'm paddling along the lake. It's just, it's fun and restorative.
That's awesome. Karen, thank you so much for taking time to chat with me and just, like I say, give us a window into you and what it means to be living strongly in your strengths and delighting in who God made you. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Barbara, for inviting me to be on your podcast. It is a delight to get to have this conversation with you and for us to just connect deeper too. So thank you for having me on your podcast. Well,
I love it. Thank you so much. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope this time has given you hope and encouragement about how amazing you are, or helped you understand someone you know or work with or love. If you're curious about your top 5 strengths, you can take the assessment at cliftonstrengths.com. If this episode's been helpful to you, please leave a review, share the podcast with a friend, or subscribe to Embrace Your Strengths podcast. You can find more information at Barbara Colwell, CULWELL.com. I sure look forward to our next time together. Take care.